This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. Thanks so much for joining us today. Earlier this week, we heard about research into why some doctors treating underserved patients burn out while others stick with a profession. But burnout is not limited to physicians in urban settings. It's an issue that, to use a medical metaphor, is endemic in the profession.
It is a phenomenon that Milwaukee area neurologist Dr. Bhupendra Khatri has witnessed and which troubles him greatly. Khatri's recent book, Healthcare 911, explores the causes he sees playing into the burnout dynamic and some both short-term and long-term remedies for it. Khatri joined us in the studio to explain. Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me here, Mitch.
What was the catalyst for this book?
You know, I have been traveling extensively throughout the country over the last 4 to 5 years. And I've spoken to hundreds of physicians. And I hear the same story, that they're not happy. They're not happy because, you know, their practices are being increasingly taken over by hospitals and larger corporations, which put profits before patients. They are, once they're hired, the administrators and the hospitals and the larger corporations take control over the health care. They call all the shots. The health care has changed dramatically over the last two decades. It's turned upside down, whereas before the physicians used to control, now it's the healthcare administrators who run the show. And that has put a lot of stress and burden on the physicians.
I don't imagine that practicing medicine was ever easy. It's not a field that people would go into if they want an easy life. But it sounds to me like a lot of the practice of medicine was easier when you got into the field.
You know, physicians always worked hard. We always put in long hours for years. And we enjoyed doing that, taking care of the patients. And we put in the same amount of hours now, but it's under different circumstances. It's not directly related to patient care. We are burdened by a lot of things. For example, electronic health records, which interferes with our relationship with our patients. It does not allow us to contact and have a good relationship with our patients, right? There's a lot of regulatory guidelines. We are told how many patients we must see in an hour. We have to record everything. Then we have to deal with the insurance companies, which is another nightmare. And it's increasing. So it's the circumstances under which we work right now which is causing the burnout. And, more than 55% of the physicians in this country suffer from burnout. And every year, more than 400 physicians kill themselves because of that.
And I want to talk about some of the areas that you were just speaking about, because there are some that might seem on their surface to be counterintuitive, that they'd be a problem. Changes that on their face seem as though they ought to be helping doctors and their patients, but you write that it hasn't turned out that way. You mentioned electronic health records to start with. This is an area that I think people might imagine allows for some standardization and for things not to fall through the cracks, that one doctor looking at what another doctor has written about a patient might be able to better access this patient's important health information. Why have electronic health records been such a challenge for doctors?
So, Mitch, you're absolutely right. You know, when electronic health records became mandatory for physicians and hospitals to use it in 2009, it was considered to be a boon. We thought this was going to help us. In reality, it has turned out to be a major problem. American Medical Association president, Dr. Stephen Steik, expert in electronic and digital healthcare, one of the youngest physicians ever appointed, he made the comment that electronic health records has been reduced to, for billing purposes, for litigation, and for regulations, right? It does nothing for the physicians who is taking care of the patient. In fact, it interferes because we have such a limited time with our patient. And we bring in the computer, and we're looking at the computer all the time. And we're not even looking at the patient. And we're not connecting with the patient. So our relationship is being eroded with the introduction of the electronic health records. And as you know, medicine is an art. We have to listen to the patient. We have to observe them. We have to examine them. We want to hear them. And if we cannot do that, how are we going to take care of our patients? And let me give you an example. When I was writing my book, there were three young physicians. Said, Dr. Khatri, you're old. You're not used to electronics and typing, and that's why you're so critical. And I said, that's not true. You know, physicians, no matter how old they are, if the technology is going to help the patients, we embrace that. So I said, well, let's do an experiment. So I told them, go see this one patient individually, but take your computer and come out. And then I send them to see another patient, and I said, don't take the computer. Do it the old-fashioned way. And when they came out, I asked them, what was the color of your patient's eyes? And the first group who took the computer, zero. They could not tell me the patient's eyes. The other group that did it the old-fashioned way, they were 100% correct. Now, that tells you something. If you cannot even look into your patient's eyes, how are you going to heal them? So electronic health records, on one hand, Mitch, you're right, it is supposed to streamline. We can have access to the records, the labs, and everything. But physicians have been reduced to data entry, and that's not right because we have limited time with our patient, and we're there to help them, not to put data into the computer.
Would you imagine there is a way to do electronic health records right so that it serves both doctor and patient?
I think there are a lot of ways we can do that. I think when it became mandatory for electronic health records, it was never put to test. So we never had a chance to see how this is going to pan out. Now, I think we do have ways to make it better. One, the electronic health records should be able to talk to each other. And so if a patient goes to one clinic or to another hospital, I should have an access. Right now, it's so difficult. Other thing is having a scribe. You know, having a scribe in the room makes it easier. But then you have to pay for the scribe, and who's going to pay for that, right? We ask the administrators to give us a scribe, and they say it's not in the budget, right? So there's financial constraints. For individual practices, first, getting electronic health records is expensive. And then getting a scribe that you cannot bill for, how are you going to afford it, right? And the other thing is that, you know, when the Affordable Care Act was brought in, Dr. Robert Koch was the only physician who sat on the National Economic Council, which ushered in the Obamacare. They realized that when 25 million or so population will get into the insurance, now we'll have insurance, they felt that the individual practices will not be able to take care of those patients. They felt we needed larger corporations, larger hospitals to take care of them. So they put in place regulations and that would favor larger corporations and hospitals, but disfavor individual physicians. They cut down their reimbursements, procedures that they would do. They would be paid less as opposed to the hospitals and larger corporations and clinics. So as a result, this private individual practices started to shut down. They could not afford to survive. So in that setting, to ask them to have electronic health records as well as to hire a scribe, it's difficult. And Bob Kocher wrote an op-ed in Wall Street Journal in 2016 saying how wrong he was about the Obamacare. One of the things that he said was he now realizes that individual doctors know the patients best as opposed to the larger corporations. And also, it is much more economical for individual practices to take care of patients than larger corporations.
That's another area that I think, on one hand, people might imagine, well, they're willing to give up the the personalization so that they might have access to the greater variety of doctors that a large corporation or a hospital might bring to them. But you're right that that really hasn't happened either. When there are hospital mergers, it doesn't necessarily mean that patients have greater access to care across a variety of specialties.
You're right, Bitch. I think the full impact of these mergers and takeover, we still don't know yet. But what we are hearing is that it's not economical. It does bring in more expenses in terms of taking care of the patients. And that's what Dr. Kocha was saying, is that with the studies that are coming from Harvard and other major institutions indicate that individual practices do a better job, not only at taking care of the patients, but also from the economic side.
You also write about the rise of hospital administrators. How is that phenomenon affecting the lives of both doctors and their patients?
So, you know, Milton Friedman, the Nobel laureate who won the Nobel Prize for Economics, he, 2 years after he got the Nobel Prize, he addressed the physicians at the Mayo Clinic. And one of the things he said is he warned them of a cancer that is brewing in the health industry, and he was referring to the healthcare administrators. And so 38 years later, the Mayo Clinic announced to the world that more than 55% of the physicians are suffering from burnout. And the major factor, the major cause for the burnout is cited as administrative overdominance. You know, for every 1 hour that a physician spends face-to-face with the patient, we have 2 hours of administrative work to do. What has happened over the years is that the growth of active physicians has not increased, or maybe increased by 1% a year. But during that time, the growth of healthcare administrators has risen by about 3,000%. So if the physician pool is the same, why do we need an increase in 3,000% of administrators? What does that tell you?
What does that tell us?
So, you know, they put in new regulations. You know, they create work for the physicians to do, which really does not affect the patient care as such. In fact, it's interfering, as I discuss in my book. And I think there's also evidence to show that the money that the administrators make is much more now than what the physicians are making. And the New York Times published not too long ago that the big bucks are made by people who, you know, who administer healthcare rather than deliver healthcare.
In other words, the idea that having more administrators in place to rein in costs hasn't reined in costs at the end of the day.
I think you said it very well.
You also write about something, and I think this is somewhat related to electronic health records, but I'm not sure patients are familiar with the concept of the ICD-10 codes and the impact that that's having on what doctors are able to do.
Right. So the ICD-10 was ushered in. It's been used in the rest of the countries as well, industrialized countries. But here it's a little bit different. You know, we have, for example, I state in the book, if I see a patient in the clinic who has got migraine headaches and I want to order MRI scan of the brain because I feel I need to rule out other possibilities, and if I order MRI of the brain, it will have more than 100 types of migraine headaches that I'll have to choose from, right? Not only that, I will have to document all of that, what I'm describing in the ICD-10 code.
And you have to do that before you actually diagnose the patient.
Exactly. And that does nothing to improve my care for the patient. But it takes a lot of time, a lot of documentation. Coming back to the same issue about the administrative dominance. So it's one of those things, right? The other thing is, for example, the insurance companies, they play a very important role in how we care for our patients. In the exam room, it's not just the patient and the doctor. There's another third person, and that's the insurance company.
They're not physically present, but they're felt.
Absolutely. And they tell the physician what to prescribe, when to prescribe, how to prescribe. And if the physicians want a particular medication for the patient, which they feel is appropriate, they will absolutely have all the control to say yes or no. And if they decide to say no, and if there's a consequences, they're not held liable, right? So meaningfully, they cannot be sued. They're above the state common law. So they get away with everything. Sometimes they don't even read the patient's notes that we submit. And to just tell you how things have gotten worse, my office, we have about 9 to 10 prior authorizations a day. I do peer-to-peer several times a week. That takes a lot of time and effort.
And ostensibly, in the peer-to-peer relationship, there is supposed to be a doctor on the other end who has the same information that you have and would logically come to the same conclusions that you would, but that is not always or maybe not even often the case.
Absolutely, Mitch. And I'll give you an example. Just I did a peer-to-peer last week. There's a patient of mine with multiple sclerosis who had failed two other treatments, and now I wanted to get the third-line therapy for this patient, and the insurance company had refused, so I had to do peer-to-peer. And this is exactly what happened. I dialed the number. There's a recording. It says, enter your physician ID number, and then the patient's text ID number, and then a live person comes in. It says, state your name and spell it. So I have to do all of that. I give my ID number, patient's name, spell it, give the text ID number. Finally, that person brought up on the screen, said, oh, you're going to do peer-to-peer? And I said, yes. Says, I'll connect you with somebody. So they connect me to another person. I have to repeat everything the same. You know, my name, spell it. And then you get irritated and you say, you know, I've already given all that info. And they say, well, we want to make sure it's the right person. So I give everything. Then he says, okay, I'm going to schedule an appointment for you to talk to peer-to-peer. And I said, no, I'm available now. I'll be happy to talk to you peer-to-peer. Oh, no, we will decide when our peer has the time to talk to you. So they gave me a time. And I said, you know, I've got a talk to give to the patients at that time. He says, too bad, you take it or leave it. If you miss that, that's it. That's the only chance you have. So I had to cancel my talk so I can take that patient, you know, peer-to-peer. And when the peer-to-peer came, it was somebody from not Wisconsin, who was, I'm not even sure was licensed in Wisconsin, but it was an internal medicine doctor who could not even pronounce the drug that I was asking for. You know, when you have to deal with this every day, you get angry, you get frustrated, and then your whole day is shot. And then you have all these patients to see and electronic health records to deal with and the administrators to deal with. And, you know, everything adds up for the burnout.
Everything does add up. And you write that often it's the when doctors complain, they're fired or they're shunned. Were you concerned at all about writing this book? Whether other doctors would be willing to talk to you? And second of all, you know, what the consequences of writing the book in the first place might be?
You know, I wrote this book, as I indicated, when I interviewed more than hundreds of physicians around the country and hear their stories, their frustrations, their fear, and my own experience over the last 30 years. And then I did extensive research about what's written up by experts in the field. And I think the time is right for this book. I think all of the stakeholders in the healthcare, the lawyers, the politicians, the pharma company, the administrators, the patients, the doctors, everybody needs to know what we're going through. because this is a healthcare crisis that nobody talks about. And unless we handle this and resolve these problems, we're heading for some difficult times. But the time is right for this book. And if I did not speak up, it would not be correct. In fact, it would be more riskier not to talk about it. Because I think we should, and we should be able to resolve these problems in a meaningful way. The purpose of this book is to try and get all of the stakeholders together. Sit down. Let's talk about it. How we can fix the problem. And I think that's the reason I wrote this book.
And clearly there are no easy fixes, but you do write that in the short term, there are things that doctors can do both to support themselves and to support each other.
And that's true. I think in order for physicians to make a meaningful change, we need to, first of all, take care of ourselves. Physicians have been in an abusive relationship for a long time. Physicians have been abused by healthcare administrators, by insurance companies. We have lost our voice. So we have been in an abusive relationship. So I think we need to heal from within as well. We all need to come together. As you know, it's against the law to collectively bargain as a group. And I think something has to change. I think we need to. When we are faced by this large, giant corporations with big hospitals, the physicians need to have a voice. And we need to collectively come together to be able to defend ourselves, not only for us, but this is for our patients. Because when the physicians suffer, we cannot take care of our patients. So the book is about not only the suffering of the physicians, but it's ultimately about taking care of the patients the best possible way we can.
Dr. Bhupendra Khatri, thank you so much for your work and thanks so much for your time.
Thank you so much, Mish, for having me here.
Dr. Bhupendra Khatri is a Milwaukee-area neurologist specializing in multiple sclerosis. His recent book is called Healthcare 911, How America's Broken Healthcare System is Driving Doctors to Despair, Depriving Patients of Care, and Destroying Our Reputation in the World.